Welcome back for another episode of Legal Marketing Radio. Maybe I should say an overdue episode of Legal Marketing Radio. I just want to apologize a little bit right off to our regular listeners. It's been a little while since our last episode. We try to keep things steady and consistent on the podcast, but we are a small agency, and sometimes client work comes up and makes it difficult to concentrate on some of our projects, like the podcast, as much as we'd like. However, we just welcomed two new team members at LeFleur. I just want to shout out to Lee and Will. And so hopefully having them on the team is going to allow me to concentrate on this podcast and let me get it out every 2 weeks like I like to. So just to catch you up, if you didn't catch the last episode of our podcast, that episode was actually part one of a two-part discussion on how to troubleshoot your digital marketing campaigns. And so if you didn't listen to that episode, it's not that you'll be completely lost in this episode, but I would encourage you to go back and check out that episode first. The two episodes really flow and as kind of a piece, and together they kind of give you a comprehensive, you know, sort of inspection plan that you can use to go over every stage of your digital marketing campaigns and see where you may be able to make some adjustments and start getting the results you're looking for. So in the first part of the discussion, we talked about, you know, potential problems in sort of the first stage of that pipeline, which is, okay, what do you do if you feel like you're doing the right things, you know, the best practices digital marketing wise, but you're not seeing traffic to your site or your properties. You're not seeing the activity that you want. So that's, you know, kind of a common problem. But I think that the problems that we're going to delve into in this episode are the ones that we deal with more often and clients look to us to solve. And those problems are, okay, what do you do when you are seeing traffic, but you're not getting leads? Or what do you do if you are seeing leads, but you're not seeing, you know, clients and cases and revenue from them, which is really what matters. So as in the last episode, we're going to have Chip and Dave from the LeFleur team joining us for this discussion. And there's a lot to talk about in this episode, so we're going to get right to it. Just a quick reminder before we get started, if you're not already familiar with LeFleur, we're a full-service legal marketing partner, and we work with law firms across the country to deliver data-driven solutions that grow their businesses. Learn more, just check us out at LeFleur.marketing. That's LeFleur.marketing. Okay, like I said, we've got a lot to talk about left in this episode. So let's jump right into the discussion on Legal Marketing Radio from LeFleur. Okay, let's move on to kind of the next phase of things. Let's talk about what you do when you are seeing traffic from social and from search and from your paid advertising, but you're not getting leads, right? You're not getting form fills and chats. You know, it's quiet even though you've got activity buzzing around. So in that case, you know, what do we look for to try to figure out what's going on and how we can improve from that point?
So to begin with, you know, we want to make sure that there are actually avenues that people can convert.
That is important.
Very important.
We need to make and sure. Overlooked sometimes. Like, you'd be surprised how many sites.
It is, ironically, so, yeah. It's hard overlooked.
We'll see with some of the more creative sites out there. The site looks great, and it's a really different user interface. Mm-hmm. And it's super, super cool, right? You scroll down, and the background moves, and the foreground moves a little bit, and there's just all these visual elements. Maybe there's a little video playing and things like that. But part of good design is actually just knowing how the thing works. Mm-hmm. You know, if you got in a car and there was no steering wheel, you know, maybe there was a better way to steer the car, right? But nobody's there to tell you how to do it, right? You're just using this website. So part of
example for me I can think of is in some cars, you know, some of the newer cars, when I haven't driven them, they have like the keyless ignition. Yeah. And like it's just kind of wonky or weird. Like I've gotten in some of those cars. And of course, like, I don't have another car to get into, so I have to figure it out. But if I did have a key ignition car, I would have just jumped into that car. You know, I'm not going to deal. It's people don't want to have time, you know, take the time to figure these things out, and they don't have a lot of patience.
Right. So just because a designer came up with this thing that's super, super cool doesn't mean that it actually functions in that particular area. Maybe it would work somewhere else. But you have to take into account the user's ability to navigate, the user's ability to interact with something, you know. So you want to look for those opportunities. And then you want to make sure that those function appropriately. And so you might have like a dynamic number for tracking purposes. You might have chat. You might have form fills. Go through, make sure those things are easy to find. Make sure that they work. Make sure that the button that you use to submit the form doesn't have the word submit on it, because nobody wants to submit right. to anything.
Yeah, we think about those kind of things. Yeah, absolutely.
So all those things from a user experience side of things. And then
another I'll just bring up real quickly too. Not only submit, but in general, we've talked about this a little bit before, but you know, your buttons and your calls to action, you know, you want language that kind of empowers the person who's doing the action. So another one that is kind of doesn't work well is request. You know, you have a button that says request your free consultation. Okay, so I'm filling out this button and clicking this form just to request something, and then maybe I'll get it, you know, maybe I'll hear back. You know, you want to have something like get your free consultation, you know, schedule your free consultation, something where it's like, you know, they feel like they're accomplishing something by clicking that button, not just putting a question out there. May I have this, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And then we have some tools that we could use, you know, like Crazy Egg or Hotjar, where we can do an overlay on the page itself, and then people can go, and then we'll basically heat map where people spend time with their mouse, what they
yeah, those
on,
are cool.
what they don't click on. So, you know, if you're still not seeing people go where you want them to go, then turn on something like that. They're inexpensive, and just see what that data looks like. You may find that people never scroll down on your page because maybe you didn't give an indication that that's what you were looking for them to do.
Another suggestion I too, that's kind of the really cheap, you know, MacGyver version of this, or the homemade version of this. There's a whole field called, you know, UX design, user experience design, and you could hire a UX designer to, you know, map out the whole user experience of your site and optimize that. But there's also the old-fashioned way is just to take someone that's never been on your site and ask them to browse it while you watch and see if they can get where, you know, you want, you know, tell them that, you know, imagine they're a person who's injured and they want to, you know, get some information about you and then maybe schedule a consultation. See if they can figure it out, or do they hesitate on certain parts of the page? Do they get stuck on things? You know, just watch someone browse your site that doesn't know about it, because so often, you know, the only perspective you get is from people who designed it, or you who's been there from every, you know, the inception of it. And you're just so familiar with it, you know, you become like blind to the user experience of it. So,
and if you don't have any friends, then you can do that as a paid service too. You can actually just pay to have people.
Everybody who listens to our podcast has friends.
I like to think so. You can pay to have people browse the site on video with audio recording. And then they'll say, well, here's my initial impression. Okay, if I'm here, you know, you can provide some instructions. This is what you're on the site to do. Then they'll say, well, I'm here to try to talk to a lawyer, but all I see is a chat window, you know. And so you can get some great insights there too. It's relatively inexpensive.
Yeah, you'll find some crazy stuff when you look at that. You'll find people clicking in weird places of the screen. Sometimes that's because of the, you know, the size adjustment. So it'll track weird. But a lot of times people try and click on words that you can't click on. They'll try and click on headlines because they look different. They'll try, and, you know, try and click on pictures. They'll try and click on videos to get them to play.
All the time videos.
And, yeah. And they won't click the play button. They'll just click anywhere on the image of the video. And so then you have insights there. Like, okay, 10 people tried to watch this video, but they couldn't. Why don't we just make the whole thing play button? And then boom, now you've got more engagement right away.
Right. I feel like this is maybe a good time to bring up A/B testing too, right?
Yeah.
Because that has to do with, you know, it can have to do with content and wording, but it can also do with page design. And so we've talked about this before on the podcast, but A/B testing is where you're just setting up actually two different versions of a page, and, you know, visitors will go to one or the other, and you'll get data about how each of those pages perform. So you can see some of the things that we're talking about, like, you know, how you, the phrasing you use on your, you know, your call to action buttons, and, you know, the phrasing on your actual headlines and things like that. You know, you can actually see, if you're not sure, which version of something you have in mind works better. And that's really important, I think, for, you know, it's always better to do these things with data rather than on your intuition, right? So that's the way to gather that data. Okay, another thing that came to mind for me is just, you know, we touched on it in the last segment too, but just cohesion across different marketing channels, right? So if you get people, you know, coming to your site and you're not getting form fills, you're getting a high bounce rate, I think you probably have to look at the overall consistency of your experience across different platforms, right? Does your social, are you using, you know, outdated images of your firm that don't line up with what you have in the main website, so that when people go there, they're going to be like, oh, wait, this is not where I wanted to go, you know, or they think it's a different site. And the same with, you know, your paid advertising. You know, are you sending people to meaningful pages on your site? And we can talk about, in particular, you know, for PPC, that's the value of landing pages, is that so many people who, you know, they click on the ad for a specific issue, they don't want to go to the homepage and then navigate from there to where they want to get, right? That's the importance of, you know, you're going to lose a ton of people that way. So is there anything else you guys look at in terms of just making your experience consistent?
Well, I mean, I think, yeah, in line with that, you know, just the initial branding of a firm, you know, we work with a lot of attorneys who have never gone through a branding exercise at all, which means that they might have a logo, they might not. They might use their firm name in different ways.
See that a lot.
Yeah. So
that's a huge pet peeve of mine. So I'm not, you know, we've had talked to some firms that have like four different ways they refer to their firm. It's like, no, you got to pick one brand name. There's not Coca-Cola and you know, I mean, yeah, you get the idea.
Yeah. And then it's a different, domain name URL, right? And so there's no way to tie those pieces together. So if you're a user, you interact with one ad or you see one ad, and then later you see a retargeting ad, and it looks completely different. Maybe it references a similar but slightly different, even you know, very minorly different name. And then you end up on the website, and the imagery there is different than the ads.
Mm-hmm. And your social properties, too. See so many, like, LinkedIn where they haven't updated the firm name. You know, it's missing a partner. It doesn't reflect. Yeah.
So with that, you just you need, like, the guiding principle behind it, right? So in a perfect world, you go and you actually get a brand your firm, you know, go through that process, identify those touch points where people are going to interface with your brand, and then make sure that they're all consistent, and then document that so that whoever works on your next landing page or your next ad or your next social post knows, hey, this is kind of the theme that we use. This is our focus. And there's a lot of variance within that. You can still use a lot of different tactics and things like that, but they have this element of consistency. And if you don't do that, then you're really spending a bunch of money that's not part of a plan. You're just building up a brand over here, and then you're building a separate brand over here and a separate brand. You have this fractured approach that each one of those things then isn't going to get the traction or you know, isn't going to get the traction that it needs to really provide you with a reasonable return. Instead, you know, pull all those things together, make sure that everybody understands exactly who you're talking about every single time. And then that's when you start to get, you know, some real traction and acceleration.
Yeah, you want to understand who you are as a brand so that you've got an idea of who you are and what you're, what you stand for, what you look like, how you feel, what you want to communicate about yourselves. But then also you want a unified understanding of who your target audience is as well. I think that's the one that people miss out on. They might have consistent branding, but then in one place you're referring to, you know, your audience as if they're, you know, elderly people who have been in a car accident, and then in the next one you're talking about, you know, millennials who are this. And so sometimes that makes sense to sort of target your audience a little differently by platform, but a lot of times,
and that's why we have audience segments too, right? Yeah, you may well have multiple audiences, but you need to target each one of them with content that's relevant to them. You know, you can't just kind of mash everything together and throw out content on all of them. It's not going to work. So another thing that occurred to me that is definitely something I'd want to consider when a firm is, you know, having trouble getting leads is the question of, you know, okay, so obviously the objective in most cases is to get people to sign up for a consultation and contact the firm, right? But what do you have to offer someone who just isn't at that stage yet where they're ready to actually contact a lawyer? And so I think that's where, you know, the importance of having other collateral comes in. You know, we like as many of our clients as possible to have something, some kind of more in-depth content. For law firms, it's usually, I mean, for a lot of companies, this would be like, you know, you're offering people a coupon code or, you know, a free branded hat or something. And, you know, maybe they do want a law firm hat. I'd wear a hat for many of our clients. But in a lot of cases, that doesn't really apply for law firms. So instead, more in-depth content assets like, you know, like a white paper, an ebook, or some kind of guide for injured people, an infographic, anything like that that's going to give them a little more in-depth info than what they can get elsewhere. And that you can kind of trade in exchange for some of their contact info and the opportunity to, you know, maybe follow up with them through email and other avenues. So I would say, if you guys agree, that's something that's pretty important too. And it can definitely, you know, help you capture the audience segment that's just not going to be quite ready when they first engage with your site to give you a call.
Yeah, similar, you know, having an option to subscribe to your blog.
That too.
You know, where people can get the information they want. Mm-hmm. I think we're sort of in between our next two phases here, right? We're in between, we're not getting leads or we're not getting clients.
Yeah, but I think we're going to move on to that in a second.
Yeah, so I think along with that, maybe to piggyback and segue in, is to not miss opportunities for lead nurturing. We did a little exercise with one of the firms we work with where we made a flow chart of their entire intake process. And, you know, from start to finish, when you know someone's got an issue and they're a hot lead, and then you get them to be a signed client and their case is resolved, how does that whole thing work out? And what we found was that in the course of that whole process, there were three or four points where people just got dropped out of the system entirely. Mm-hmm. So maybe they did some research and they found out that their case was not quite as good as they thought it was going to be. And so they said, decided not to end up taking it. Which happens sometimes, but then they
still provides value for your firm, right? You would have just found that out through a consultation with them. That would have taken time. I mean, it's valuable when clients can able, you know, find that out on their own.
Yeah. But then right after that, they dropped off their entire system. You know, they got deleted out of the system and they were gone.
Yeah,
they,
that's a problem.
No more emails, no more nothing, no more contact with their firm. Mm-hmm. That's a huge missed opportunity.
Big
just
time.
Just because someone's not your client right now and their case doesn't fit your criteria right now, it doesn't mean they're not going to have another case later on. This is especially true for like personal injury attorneys.
Or if they're self-determining, right? Like,
right.
Definitely. Hey, I was going to bring that up.
This is not a case, but it doesn't mean it's
right. Whereas if they got a little more information, they might reassess again. Mm-hmm. You know, I think anyone could relate to when you delve into a topic and at first you're like, oh my gosh, this is overwhelming. I don't want to deal with this. And then as you kind of take it out in little more bite-sized chunks, you start to, okay, I can get a handle on this. Maybe this is doable, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so there were a couple different points in that sequence where they just totally dropped off the firm's radar. Those were like 90% of the way there. And then they were lost before they could have really closed on that, or they didn't nurture those people for the long term so that if some issue does arise later on, they could pick them right back up where they left off.
That's definitely a big opportunity. Mm-hmm. Okay, before we segue completely over to the not getting, you know, enough actual clients, getting leads but not getting clients, I just want to touch on, you know, in terms of getting more leads and more conversions from your, let's talk about content a little bit. Dave, I'll kind of kick it over to you because, you know, you're the content director. And so what do you look forward to see whether a client, what do you look for to see whether a client's content can be more conversion oriented, more optimized to actually generate leads?
I would look particularly at the structure of your content. So you would maybe think about, you know, if assuming all things being equal and you've got a kind of best practices all in place, that would be one place where you might be able to optimize, where you put a call to action at the very top of the page so it's easy to get to. Mm-hmm. And then what you do is you present the most critical information that someone needs and you put your most persuasive information at the top. And then if they want to keep moving down, they can read more.
Right, because there's so much data, right, to show that most people are never going to scroll down
right
past the fold, which mm-hmm. is, you know, they're not going to scroll down in your content.
Yep, and the other thing
would
be,
you need to have something for them.
Right, and if they do scroll down, they're going to do it in a skimming fashion. They're not going to read everything, every word, so you want to make sure that it's reader-friendly, formatted in a reader-friendly way so that your headlines can sort of convey the gist of your central structure as well. And then by the time they get to the bottom, if they are even just skimming, they should have a pretty good idea. Oh, like if this is this and this, then I should probably talk to these people. And then that would be one thing that you'd probably want to look at on the content side.
Yeah, definitely. A couple other things that occurred to me is, you know, I would want to look at, you know, obviously we touched on in the previous segment, but, you know, do you have content that is inspiring trust in your firm? And visual content is a big part of that. So people being able to, you know, see you, see your staff and see what they're going to be dealing with, that's enormous, you know. If you went through a whole site and, you know, you were trying, I mean, put yourself in the user's shoes, right? If you went through a law firm's entire site and you didn't really know what their office looked like or who you're going to be dealing with by the end of your browsing session, are you going to call them? Probably not, when I can find another firm where I have a great idea, you know, of what I'm going to be walking into, who I'm going to be dealing with, you know, see someone, hey, that looks like a guy I'd want to, you know, get to know. Okay. So I think that's just a big factor in terms of getting people to actually fill out a form, you know, inspiring that trust that requires them, you know, that's required for them to do that. Obviously, another element of that is, you know, customer testimonials. Do you have, you know, statements from, and if those are video, so much the better, right? I mean, cool. Nothing more powerful than a video testimonial of someone who's an actual client. You know, people can see that person, they're real, they're talking about you. And the fact that they're willing to go on camera and spend that time to speak for your firm is really big, I think, in terms of a trust factor.
Actually, that brings up a good point too, you know, with testimonial videos. You know, we produced a lot of those, and what we find with those is that the number of views, generally speaking, isn't that high. Personally, I don't think that that's a huge issue because I think that the people that are thinking of hiring the firm are watching those testimonials. And so I don't think that they appeal to a super, super broad audience, but I think they do appeal to that person who's thinking about making that decision.
Yeah, we see that in the content side. When you look at the analytics, you don't see a ton of people going to, say, the client stories. We have one client we do one new client story for them every month where we talk about a case that they handled. And so you don't see a ton of traffic on those pages, But the traffic you do get on those pages is outstanding. They have super low bounce rates, some of them even in the 30% range. It's amazing. They do really, really well. And those testimonial videos tend to be on those pages as well. And so that people are reading about this story, they're reading about how the firm handled it, they're reading, you know, they're getting this person's perspective who was helped, and then they're seeing that as they go through this content as well, in these little video clips. It's really powerful stuff, and it works.
Right, and it's not always about just traffic volume, you know? I mean, it's about, like Dave said, it's about are they spending time with that content itself? And who are the people who are ultimately looking at that? And so we have some pretty good tracking software that we use so that we can get an idea of what that process and the journey looks like. You know, but just from some basic analytics software, you know, if you see that bounce rate in the 30s and you see a person spending, you know, 3 to 5 or 7 minutes on a page, maybe you only got 15 people on that page, but your average was 5 or 7 minutes. That's somebody who's pretty invested in that story. They want to hear what happened. That's probably somebody who's interested in hiring you. Mm-hmm. So is it worth it for those 15 views? It probably is.
And, you know, for a lot of firms that, you know, are maybe smaller and have a local focus and only want to take cases, you know, from within a given area around their office, I mean, you know, getting 3,000 visitors to a page is almost like, so what? You know there's not 3,000 people in that area, right, you know, actually Googling this issue who want to hire a lawyer. So, you know, there is some nicety to having traffic, and it can, you know, help you in your overall rankings a little bit and make you feel good. But, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, most of those people are never going to, you know, be relevant to your...
Traffic's a vanity metric in a lot of ways. It's not telling you a ton. It'll tell you something's grossly wrong if your traffic is really bad, but it's... If you're getting traffic, that's good. When you're getting tons of traffic, it just makes you feel good, but it probably isn't actually telling you a whole much about.
Right, yeah. A lot of times when you do keyword research, I know I've done a lot of it for smaller firms, and we'll look at a given area and the number of people that have gathered like kind of a term that indicates they're, you know, really ready to hire a lawyer, like, you know, personal injury attorney, you know, near this location. You know, the number of searches that in a given month will be like 10,
right,
you know, and so... Obviously, you know, if you get 3,000 people, you know, most of them, the other, you know, 2,990 are just going to be people who are Googling the general topic, maybe for whatever reason, or, you know, Googling something related, and they don't really have any interest in hiring a lawyer or talking to a lawyer.
Or a toddler that's clicking a display.
There's always that, yeah, too. Going back to that, yep. Okay. So now let's make the proper segue into kind of the third category, which is kind of the trickiest one, I think, and one we've... You know, we've had to address a few times with different clients that we've had, which is where, okay, you know, you're getting the web traffic and you're even getting chats and form fills, you know, from your site, but they're not turning into the cases that you want. So in that case, you know, how do you go about addressing that problem, which seems like maybe the most difficult one to solve? And there's a lot of components to it too, right? I know that.
I would say this is probably, on our end as a marketing agency, it's one of the most frustrating problems to have. Because what we'll do is we've gathered these people, we've gotten them to your website, we've gotten them to take action, and then we've delivered that to the law firm. So, you know, like our job is complete, but then if it doesn't turn into a case for them, then it's not, though. You know, and that's a really big part of what we do too, is, you know, making sure that everything goes all the way through. And those leads do end up becoming cases. And one of the things we might look at right away, I lost my train of thought.
I think too, I should let you finish before I... One of the things we look at right away is what you said.
I know.
Targeting, maybe?
It wasn't targeting. It was... No, it's gone.
It's gone? Okay.
I can talk about targeting.
Sure, let's talk about targeting.
One of the first things that we look at, especially if we're looking at, you know, traffic on the paid side, is where are we advertising? So when we first look at a campaign, you know, that we've inherited from somewhere else, we take a close look at the geotargeting. You know, if it's a law firm, they're probably interested in a very specific geographical area. But really, you know, across other clients that we've worked with too, you know, we're not talking e-commerce businesses here. We're talking about, you know, usually businesses with local footprint. And so what we'll find more often than not is they've got one or more campaigns set up, and the campaigns will range from being pretty good to being pretty bad. But even sometimes in the better campaigns, the geo-targeting is just off, you know. Maybe it's a 100-mile radius, you know, around a city. If it's a better one, we'll find like retargeting campaigns, which I think we see this all the time because, you know, we're going to competitors' sites and we're going to different, you know, entities that they work with. And then 2 days later, we're seeing an ad from that site that we visited. So we know that, you know, retargeting works. It's a great tactic, but we're seeing these ads here in Grand Rapids, Michigan, maybe the firm's in Louisiana. So they set up a retargeting campaign, but then didn't geo-restrict it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you can imagine somebody else, they read an article really resonates, or they click on an ad, the ad resonates, or the resource that they try to get resonates. They fill out a form because they want to talk to you. But they're totally not in your geographic area, and that disqualifies them. So we can deal with that a bit too on the organic side, but especially on the paid side. And it's an easy thing to check, right? Where are our ads showing? Where are our retargeting ads showing? I find it gets missed more on the retargeting side than just the general campaigns. But you're really wasting that impression. And if you're wasting that impression on us, you're wasting it on thousands of other people too.
Is lead follow-up?
Yeah, that's the thing I was going to touch on. Real quick before we go to that, I think that's really important. But I was just going to mention that, you know, so obviously you kind of cover the paid side there. And I think on the organic side, obviously it's a little bit harder to, you know, really restrict who's going to see your content. And I think part of it can come with just having good content that, you know, it's tricky when you're a law firm because you probably want your, you know, clients from only a given local area. But you're probably writing about topics that are going to apply to people, you know, throughout the U.S. and through a broad variety of regions. And, you know, we've learned from at least one client I can think of, there is just no amount that you can put on the page of, you know, only accepting clients from Houston, Texas. You are still going to get leads from California and Pennsylvania. And, you know, part of it is sort of a good problem to have. You know, your content is getting out there and you're just not going to be able to eliminate every relevant lead. Obviously, you know, there's some things you do want to check on. You want to make sure that you're making clear on your pages, you know, what areas, you know, your firm actually serves. And even in your blog content, you know, I try to make that clear in every blog content, maybe in the CTA section. And you may need to do other things to, you know, make sure you're connecting with the right audience, you know, localize your pages a little bit more. But, you know, again, in organic search, I feel like there's only so much you can do. And sometimes it's okay to have people calling you from across the country. The other thing that, you know, I just wanted to mention, I kind of touched on keyword research before, but I think that's a really good way to make sure that you're tapping into an audience that already exists that needs your services, you know. When you do keyword research, you can actually get, you know, a list and a picture of the actual search terms that people are plugging in, and you can find out which ones are a pretty good indicator that they're looking for a lawyer, you know, in your area that is like you, that and you may be able to help them. So I think if you didn't start out with keyword research, that's, you know, that creates a pretty high risk of, you know, not tapping into that traffic and instead just kind of casting a general wide net that's not nearly going to be effective.
Winging it, essentially.
Yeah, you're winging
it. Yeah. I think, too, you don't want to discount the follow-up inside your internal processes for follow-up at your law firm.
Yeah, we need to talk about that.
Yeah, and we had recently written a blog post about that. We've written a couple of blog posts about it, actually, about sort of what an ideal lead follow-up procedure looks like. But, Stephen, you had some really good stats about how the time really matters.
These stats I like to pull out. I think Kyle came up with them, but they're just kind of mind-blowing, so I like to keep them in my back pocket. And the first of them is that from the point when the actual lead contacts you, from that point, between 5 minutes after that and 30 minutes after that, your odds of successfully contacting that person and getting in touch with them and converting drops by 100 times. Okay. So that's just within a half an hour. And so many firms I know that, you know, they're not thinking even in terms of minutes in terms of lead follow-up. They're thinking in terms of hours.
If not days.
If not days. Yeah.
Yeah.
So within that first 30 minutes, you've got 100 times, you know, a drop off factor of 100 times. And the other statistic, which actually maybe even blows my mind a little more, is that after 20 hours have passed, making contact with a lead or trying to contact a lead actually hurts your chances of converting them. That's so almost counterintuitive. But if you, at that point, once 20 hours have passed, if you call them back after that, you are actually less likely to convert them into a client or into a, you know, whatever you're looking for, than if you did nothing. Right. So that's how bad it is to wait even a full 24 hours for your lead file. And so many firms, you know, they're shooting for 24 hours. You know, based on this data, you need to rethink that.
Yeah, and I think that's a symptom of the internet age, you know, that, you know, we do have a, you know, when it was just the phone book and you called somebody and left a message, you could maybe wait a day to get in touch with somebody, but you can't do that anymore because if you don't call them back, 10 minutes later, they can get right back on Google and look at the next guy on the list who looks just as good probably. And so and
they're probably going to put out multiple of them and whoever, you know,
whoever gets back first. Yeah. Yep. I had a friend who received, he got a traffic ticket and he got letters, you know, sort of solicitation letters essentially from like six different firms, like all around, right around the same time. Mm-hmm. Wow. He ended up going, they were all the same price. They were all, and then, but there was one of them who, this is sort of a tangent, but this speaks a little bit to when you can turn leads into clients. This guy was a great lead. For these people, they sent these solicitation letters, and only one firm actually told him how he could handle it himself. So they said, "Hey, here's the court you need to be at. Here's what you probably need to do, and the time that you need to show up. And if you need some help, call us." And he ended up going with
that's the firm he went with.
Yeah, because they gave him something valuable for free.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. As we've said so many times before, honestly, if the person can really handle the case themselves without a hitch, it probably wasn't going to be that valuable of a case for you anyway, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean.
And there's new tools out there now too that actually allow us to initiate a phone call off of a form fill, and so we're starting to roll that out.
This is super cool technology.
It is, and so people fill out this form, they enter their phone number in the form, and hit hopefully not submit, but something similar, and then the firm's phone rings to whoever is designated as the line. They answer the phone, and then as they're answering the phone, the person who filled out the form, their phone is ringing. And so when they connect, the response is a surprise, you know, like, whoa, like you got back to me already. But you're in a race, you know, like you said, you're in a race to be the first person to contact them. Whoever contacts them the quickest, I mean, you're communicating something just by making that contact. You're saying, I care enough about you who filled out this form to put a hole in whatever I'm working on and make sure that I reached out to you because you're that important. And if you're not the first one there, you know, somebody else is going to be communicating that instead. And they're going to be saying, hey, we care more about you than this other firm. And so why not use something that's then going to allow you to immediately follow up? We find, too, this bleeds over into what we're talking about. You know, what is that intake? What's the approach to intake? You know, is it a paralegal or a lawyer who's already slammed working on existing cases? Because that person probably is going to look at intake and say, I'm making more work. You know, this is creating more work for me and I already have too much work as it is. And not every firm can do it, obviously, you know, firms in different stages and sizes. But if the firm can afford it to have somebody whose job is to bring in those cases and bring in new clients, and that's what, you know, that's what they're reviewed on, that's what they talk about, that's what they do, then they're going to have a very different attitude toward when that form fill comes in. And they're going to dive on the phone right away if they're not using something like that, because that's the purpose of their job. So if you can't align your firm and align your team, you know, where somebody is a dedicated intake person, then I think that you're a lot better off, you know, and just build that culture that, you know, new clients, that's our lifeblood, you know, our existing clients need our best, but those new clients, you know, are extremely valuable.
Yeah, and I think when you're talking about someone who's overworked already or who's got a lot on their plate, it, you know, answering the phone isn't always the first thing on their mind if they're in the middle of something and they don't want to lose their train of thought or they've just turned their phone right off. And people are really impatient. You know, I wouldn't underestimate the impatience of people. I've just been looking through the data on one of our clients and who strives to get back to people as soon as possible. But I've seen people fill out 3 forms in an hour. So, like, that speaks to this deeply, that they're willing to go out of their way, which I was shocked at, to be honest, that people fill out more than one form in a visit. But they would. They would fill out 3 forms. Say, hey, I'm here. you know, and if your goal is to get back to that person in 24 hours, they're gone. Mm-hmm. You know, that person is gone. Right. They tried 3 times,
yeah.
couldn't get a response, and they're gone. And they could have been an amazing case.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of predicated this whole discussion on, you know, people kind of having the baseline things that we recommend in place. But obviously, you know, having live chat is huge for this too, right? Mm-hmm. You know, in the times, there's going to be times when people, you know, are just looking stuff up late at night, and there's, you know, you're just not going to be able to pick up the phone. And obviously having live chat and also email automation in place are both really big, right, for being able to engage with those people. Finally, the other thing that kind of occurred to me is, you know, I feel like I remember at least one or two clients where we've kind of had to have this discussion, which is, you know, let's say, you know, almost every client, we work with a lot of personal injury clients, you know, obviously because that's an area of law where a lot of attorneys are looking to get cases, you know, but it's also one of the most competitive areas of law. And so we've had to, you know, kind of look at things with a couple clients where it's been like, okay, you know, we want to keep doing, you know, pursuing personal injury and, you know, making content that supports that. But also, you know, we see that you have a huge opportunity here in family law or, you know, social security cases or something like that. And so, you know, maybe you need to look at the practice areas you're targeting and, you know, perhaps you've underestimated or underemphasized one when actually you have a big opportunity there, you know?
And size of budget really comes into play there too, where if you're in a market that has really strong competition around personal injury, then that means that the bid, the cost per click is going to be through the roof.
Especially like any major city, right?
It's major brutal. Metropolitan areas, yeah. It's insane.
Yeah, so now you're going out there and you're saying, okay, well, I have this budget and I'm going to compete against somebody who has 50 times the budget. That has a pretty strong effect on what type of click you're going to get. There's going to be name recognition that you're fighting against. Smaller community, it may be a different scenario. So each one really requires kind of that we take a deeper look, you know. But if a firm has multiple practice areas and they're trying to break into one, then, you know, they really have to shift their budget and they have to have an awareness of who their competition is and what they're doing and what their budget potentially looks like. And we have some tools to kind of spy a little bit and get at least start to get that picture. But we just want people to be cautious, you know, and say, okay, this is going to be a tough one, you know, and those leads might not be there right now, you know, until we can get to a certain level.
Right. So if you're, you know, a smaller firm or just trying to get established and, you know, you want to stake your claim on car accident cases, you know, you can do that, but you have to recognize that it's going to require a lot of resources and it might take time to show returns, right?
Yeah, especially if you've been in a previous, if you're sort of a more of a generalist who has other, you know, practice areas you've been working on, if you don't have the content even on your site to support an effort on the paid side already. So you have to sort of build up that base first and then look at what's going to really work. How is this actually going to play out? Because if you throw money at something and you've got nothing there for people to follow through on, then you're throwing money into a hole.
And you have to have a system to value, like we were talking about before, you have to have a system to capture and place value on leads that don't immediately convert. You know, the leads may drop off, but if you don't have a system in place to retain those leads so you can do follow-up marketing to them, then it's the same thing. You know, you had an opportunity, maybe you got somebody to your landing page and they filled that out, and then you say, well, we're not a good fit. Well, you still spent, there was still an acquisition cost for that lead. So now are you just writing that lead off, or do you have a follow-up plan, you know, to get a newsletter out to them or to follow up with the drip campaign or something like that?
Okay. I feel like we've covered a lot here. We could probably keep going for a long time, but we should probably wrap up here. And you know what? If we hope this walkthrough kind of helped you, you know, kind of look at your digital marketing through a new lens and figure out maybe where you can make some improvements and where some problems might be. And if you still have questions, you can always give us a call. We're right here and we're ready to help. So we can walk you through it in person. All right. That's it for this week's podcast. Thank you guys so much. As always, Chip, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Steven.
And Dave, thanks for joining us too.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks, guys. Okay, that's it for our two-part discussion on how to troubleshoot your digital marketing campaigns. Man, it felt like we covered a lot of ground in those two episodes, and I'm pretty happy about what we came up with, and we hope that you came away with some really valuable insights too. We are planning another episode in 2 weeks, and then after that, we'll be off for the holidays. But after that, check back for new content from this podcast every 2 weeks. As always, we're so glad you joined us, and if you have a question or a suggestion for the podcast, just send an email to radio@lafleur.marketing. All right, that's it for this week. We'll see you next time on Legal Marketing Radio from LaFleur.